Good morning, and thank you for letting me talk today about invasive reed canary grass. And I'm quite sure you know that reed canary grass is the cash crop in the United States. And if you never heard about it, that's okay. I never heard about this before I started this research. And why I call about cash crop, because we spend millions to mitigate the problem of reed canary grass and its invasiveness. And today I would like to talk about reed canary grass in a context of herbarium specimens as a kind of benchmark to identify possibly native reed canary grass to North America. And overall goals of this project is to determine native and exotic reed canary grass location within Minnesota. And then based on that information to develop portable molecular device which would allow identification of the native versus exotic types on a particular location, so the mitigation can be faster at a particular location, and at the end facilitate conservation of native reed canary grass genotypes. But in this particular presentation, I would like to focus a little bit more on the work of on the herbarium specimens and then challenges. So reed canary grass is widely distributed in Minnesota, mainly in the northern part of the United States. It's mainly dominant species on the wetlands, and in particular, in Minnesota, you can see the highest density of locations where it can be found. And I would like to focus you on a Roseau location in Minnesota. That particular place have a field where reed canary grass was planted as a seed source for farmers. So there's a few cultivars of reed canary grass were planted there. And also there's a field which is most likely to contain actually native types of reed canary grass. Reed canary as an invasive species, like I mentioned before, it's a major threat to natural wetlands. And here on this picture you can see a floating island of dense reed canary grass. It creates large mono-specific stands. It's highly competitive, invades disturbed areas. It's still being planted across the states despite education by the DNR and informing farmers about its invasive potential. And Roseau, Minnesota is the location where most of the seeds in the United States by cultivars came from. Traditionally, reed canary grass is used as a forage due to its high biomass production and easy of the cultivation. Also was used by the Native American tribes for their weaving purposes. Currently, it's also used for bedding, some ornamental types. And the most recent usage of the reed canary grass is primarily in Europe for biofuels and soil stabilization and bioremediation. And since I'm going to talk about herbarium specimens and trying to identify native types of reed canary grass, it's good to look at the history of reed canary grass. So like I mentioned, American tribes use reed canary grass for various purposes, to weave baskets, pick huts, fishing wares, and wigwam roofs. And that also indicates that there's a possibility of reed canary grass spread across the states by the native tribes. Also, European genotypes of reed canary grass were introduced to North America for forage, beginning early 800s. Also, here it's a very important thing to note that technically at the time of the settlements at that time, most of the population of the settlers in the United States was actually in the West Coast. So, for example, area of the Minnesota and farther, actually there was relatively still undisturbed land. So cultivation most likely didn't happen there. As far as the cultivation of the reed canary grass in Europe, first cultivars were recognized in 1749 in Sweden, and they were derived from a European native stands. What's also important that behavior of the reed canary grass in Europe is very similar to this in the United States. However, despite its aggressive character there, it's not considered to be invasive. And when I talk about cultivars, it's a kind of stretch because they were not very advanced, maybe one or two generations. And some are just genotype collections or selections from the nature. Also important date to mention, the time of the Dust Bowl in the United States, 1930 time, where due to the hay shortage, farmers from Roseau, Minnesota, used the native field of reed canary grass for haying and distribution of the reed canary grass throughout the state. As far as the genetic research on the reed canary grass, there's not much happening. However, there's a few research recently trying to tackle the genetic structure and composition of that species. And in this particular case, Jakubowski 2013, he actually utilized the herbarium species to try to identify native grasses. So why herbarium species? Because those particular collections were made about 140 years ago. So we suspect that people who collected them most likely collected the native types of red canary grass, which originally grew there, and without the new introduced forage cultivars from the Europe. So we kind of try to look at the herbarium collections before 1940 or even earlier, if possible. So they did similar work here, as you can see. Herbarium specimens, most of them created a very distinct cluster from the European and Asian accessions of the red canary grass. And the more recent research, Kavova 2018, where they compared European horticultural and forage samples and then Minnesota wild and Czech wild types. As you can see, there are three different distinct clusters. European cultivars a little bit on the other side, and Czech and Minnesota relatively overlapping. So as far as our research, we have an extensive collection of leaf tissue to purify genomic DNA. Mainly it's a wild Minnesota and Czech Republic for a comparison of how the populations behave there in nature. Some ornamental types, forage, and Minnesota herbarium ranging from 1880 to 1985. And in this particular presentation, I will just focus on about 100 genotypes, which were selected from this 3,500 sample collection, just kind of create a pilot experiment. Mainly few locations, mainly the Weaver, Reno, La Crescent, and Rousseau rivers in Minnesota, few Czech samples, and Minnesota cultivars Venture, Vantage, and Palaton, and ornamental type Picta, and a few herbarium samples from the early 1900s. So this is our collection scheme as far as major rivers in Minnesota. Red dots means that's a major location. The distance between dots is about 30 kilometers. And then within each location, we have an additional subsampling. As you can see, not all the locations will have a transect. However, multiple genotypes or the individuals were subsampled from each particular location. Then again, down the stream, you have another location. Anytime when you do any type of marker or DNA work, you will see that slide on a presentation. DNA quality is very important. And it's kind of like, okay, yeah, great. Quality is important, and everybody knows that. And how important is that? So you do your ODs, you know, and you are happy. Yes, it's within the range. So it's clean DNA. Great, that's good. But then, especially when you work in a 140 years old tissue, let's say, you would actually like to look at the DNA, how it looks like. And here, for example, we have a comparison of fresh tissue DNA, very high molecular weights of the DNA, more than 10,000 nucleotides, trust me. And this is the same kit. This is the standard 96-well kit, nothing special. You can get it very cheaply to facilitate your purification. And here you have a panel of the herbarium DNA samples, and you can see that in general, samples will kind of fall into that, you know, up to 1,000, as you can see, the more condensed DNA here. But there's almost no high molecular DNA here at all, except maybe a few samples. So in general, DNA is degraded. And, you know, personally, when I was purifying the DNA, I was thinking I will not get anything. It's 140 years old DNA. Someone just collect the tissue, dry it, put it in a paper, and it sits there forever. So actually, I was happy to see anything. And then as a next step to see if it's actually useful, I used the EST, SSRs, and ITS region to basically see if any genes are will be amplify any genes from that DNA. And you can see here comparison of multiple EST, SSR markers, and fresh tissue and herbarium tissue. So you can see that, yes, you can actually use herbarium DNA quite well, except maybe, you know, like, for example, here is a way weaker signal. And so the thing is that, yes, you can have a degraded DNA, which means it's shredded. So as long as you have a particular, if the genome is just shredded, it's actually not bad because most of the markers, even a GBS, new one, rely on a relatively short pieces of DNA. So as long as DNA was not somehow degraded specifically for some particular region, you're still supposed to capture the polymorphism. on that sample of DNA. And in this case, we actually decided to go with the genotypic bisequencing since SSR methods were used. The previous research was used with SSRs and ISSRs or other. However, today it's way cheaper and faster to actually start using GBS. And in this particular case, we use the DART-seq, which is a highly optimized genotype by sequencing. And when I tell you it's highly optimized, it means that, you, as you can see, there's a whole bunch of processes you would have to do. However, when you send this to the diversity array technologies, all of those processes are done for you. So technique, you send in DNA, and they will send you a scoring table. So you don't have to worry about assemblies, SNP calling, you know. Maybe, so basically, that's like a hands-off and actually works pretty well. They produce 17,000 SNP markers for our lines with the at least minimum coverage of 5x. And here, of course, you have to do some sort of normalization of the data and see what's the quality of the, your SNP markers. So here is a distribution of the number of the missing SNP data on a y-axis, and then I have a read canary genotypes. And as you can see, there's almost like in the middle, there are two plates. One plate contains mostly the herbarium specimens, and the other plate contains fresh tissue. So you can see that those long lines indicate how many missing data you have per genotype. So the longer the bar, the more missing data you have. So that you want to have a kind of the shortest possible bars. So you can see there is a kind of like relatively, you know, equal level of missing data across all the genotypes. However, there's those peaks. And as you can see, most of these high peaks are actually from the herbarium samples. Only 9 samples from herbarium kind of fall into the below the mean bar as far as the missing data. And the missing data in general for GBS can mean that there is a real polymorphism in a restriction site, or actually it's a bad quality DNA. So coming back to a structure analysis of reed canary grass, Ivano method indicated as a 3 possible clusters. And one of those clusters will be Rousseau field, like I mentioned, the place where the canary grass was cultivated for the seed production. And the Venture and Palaton cultivars fall into that place very well. And then you have two other clusters, basically predominantly Minnesota, the green part here, predominantly Minnesota, and then predominantly Czech samples. But the herbarium samples are kind of in both clusters. What's more important that there's those two herbarium Minnesota Illy one, 1890, I actually fall very nicely into the wild types of Minnesota. So now when you compare this to Jakubowski research, when you have a very distinct cluster of herbarium samples, completely different from everything else, here the situation looks kind of different, I would say. And in my opinion, it's actually better, because that means that there's a chance that actually the Minnesota samples, Minnesota population of reed canary grass is actually relatively native to the United States, if you assume that herbarium represents native population. And also, Ivano method suggested there's a possibility of some subgroups, but in general, that's the main thing, that we have a cultivar group, and then predominant Minnesota, predominant Czech. And just I want to briefly show you the principal component analysis. Very similar situation, you have a group of the Rousseau field. That mouse is kind of, I can't see the mouse. Rousseau field here with the two reed canary grass varieties, Palaton and Venture. And then here, when you look at the Czech and Minnesota, this similar situation to Kavova research, that they kind of overlap. And then when you actually go and look at the herbarium samples, they really fit into that cluster. And then additional, I would say, indication that our when we analyze our full data set, we actually start seeing even here on a pilot that even locations within, let's say, the same river, this is the one location, Mississippi River, and here you have another Mississippi River location. So there's a kind of, most likely we will see some pattern of migration and genetic changes along the river. So that'll be for the future analysis. And as far as the conclusion, I would say that herbarium samples have some utility in genetic analysis, but be very careful and look at the quality of your results in any possible way. In this case, we see that Rousseau Minnesota location shares genetic similarity to the Venture and Palaton, which means that technically, based on that small sample, we don't see the spread of the cultivars in a state. There was the idea that cultivars can contribute to invasiveness of reed canary grass, so we don't know yet, but definitely are distinct. And then that seq is actually quite efficient in the differentiation among extant genotypes and cultivars. And historic herbarium GDNA, genomic DNA can be used effectively, I would say, for other species, and we are going to work on other herbarium specimens. And in as far as the future work, I would like to analyze all 3,500 samples of Minnesota varieties, and then revisit also the samples we didn't work. Most likely we can tweak it, our methods better, and then determine the paths of reed canary grass germplasm migration of Minnesota rivers. And hopefully someone will pay for a genomic sequence of reed canary grass. It's huge, but today we can make huge pieces of DNA too, so maybe we can put it together. And thank you for all of those guys who helped me here. And, but, yes, okay, thank you.